So a source reached out to me and was very disturbed by what the Office of Refugee Resettlement is looking at here, because these figures far exceed anything that ORR or the Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees ORR, was considering over the past years or even decades. This would mark, these plans would mark, a massive expansion in ORR's operations, taking care of young children who were brought to this country unlawfully and then separated from their parents. Now, the documents are also a shock because they're quite recent, dated to this month, in fact. And yet Donald Trump has purported to pause family separations. And so what these documents reveal, and we can get into this, is that that pause either has not been transmitted fully to the rest of the executive branch, or it's not actually a strategy, because other parts of the executive branch are still considering how to budget for family separations when they resume.
Tell us more about the documents. Just dig into it for us. What you found.
Yeah, so as I said, these are budgeting documents, a budgeting exercise that ORR engaged in to try to figure out how much money it's going to need to ask Congress for over the rest of the year. So we're closing in on the end of fiscal year 2018. That ends up on September 30th. And ORR looks like it's going to face a $585 million shortfall for all of fiscal year 2018, almost entirely because of family separations. This this policy of zero tolerance that led to the separation of parents and children at the border, this was a huge shock to agencies throughout the executive branch, chief among them the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which has the legal responsibility of taking care of these children. It was originally tasked with taking care of minors who arrive at the border unaccompanied by any parent. But its job was expanded when Trump began to separate these parents and children and put the children into ORR's care. So that is going to lead the agency to have a nearly $600 million shortfall through September 30th. And then from October 1st through the end of calendar year 2018, the agency is looking at a $1.3 billion shortfall. That is over the course of just a few months. The agency thinks that it may need an additional $1.3 billion, bringing the total shortfall for all of these costs of family separation up to about $2 billion for the calendar year of 2018.
Now, this is a budgeting exercise. As you said, there are a lot of innocent regions that bureaucracies can engage in budgeting exercises. One might be to wave the flag that says, whoa, 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 this thing you want to do is way too expensive. Another might be just to get more money, which almost every bureaucracy kind of has an institutional set of incentives to do. What are the indications that this is like the agency trying to create an operationalizable plan for mass detention of children?
Yeah, so that's absolutely true. And the documents note that this is a sort of worst case scenario for the agency, though it is a scenario that is within the realm of possibility. So the bureaucrats who were discussing this budgeting exercise did not view this as a kind of like a nightmare that could never possibly happen, or a kind of warning to appropriators that this is going way too far and needs to stop. Instead, this was an attempt by these bureaucrats to figure out how they can cover the costs if Trump resumes family separations and the family separations continue apace. Now, one really noteworthy aspect of these documents is that HHS seems to view Trump's executive order somewhat differently from how the rest of us have. So when Trump signed this executive order on June 20th, he said, I am hereby pausing family separations for the most part, which seemed like decently good news, though it did mean that instead of separating these parents from their children, the administration was going to detain parents and children together. What HHS believes, and I think this is a perfectly plausible reading of the executive order, is that it is unlawful under the Flores legal settlement to detain children outside of like an ORR our facility to detain them for longer than 20 days. So the administration kind of set itself up for this cliff that it's now facing, where less than a month after the executive order dropped, they're going to be hitting this deadline where they'll have parents and children detained together for 20 days, and they're going to have a legal obligation to move those children elsewhere. Now, of course, the Trump administration went to court to try to extend that deadline, but it failed badly. A federal judge ruled that the Trump administration could not unilaterally modify this longstanding settlement that guarantees children the right not to be detained for longer than 20 days. So all of these federal agencies appear to be scrambling to figure out what's going to happen now, what's going to happen if and when family separation resumes, and how can these children be taken care of in a way that doesn't clearly violate the settlement that's been around for more than 20 years.
So your story cites that they're looking at having to create money for as much as 25,400 beds. And then one of the places that they're looking to pay for child separation is by reallocating money from the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program, which provides a comprehensive system of care that includes primary medical care and essential support services for people living with HIV who are uninsured or underinsured. Can you talk more about these funding streams that they're looking into?
Yes, and I would note that this is separate from the $1.9 billion that ORR may ask Congress to appropriate. These are called secretary transfers, and the Secretary of HHS, Secretary Azar, has the legal authority to move money around from different accounts within the agency to a limited extent. And so that is what we're talking about here. ORR is considering asking the Secretary to move money that was appropriated for HIV/AIDS patients to HHS through the Ryan White program to help the agency cover the costs of housing children who were separated from their parents. Now, that is a big deal for HIV/AIDS advocates, LGBTQ advocates, who have been very alarmed by this development, because the Trump administration has already tried to slash funding for HIV/AIDS patients and has actually already raided different HIV/AIDS accounts to try to cover other unexpected costs. So this isn't a shocking development, but it does kind of show you where the administration's priorities are. It's willing to yank hundreds of millions of dollars from the Ryan White program in order to cover the costs of family separations. The agency's also already working on moving money from this big refugee account that's meant to help refugee resettlement to cover the costs of child and family separations. That's a big deal because it indicates that the Trump administration doesn't plan on taking many more refugees over the next couple of years. This is all happening kind of ahead of time. The agency is looking to the future and saying, well, where aren't we going to need to have this money? And the number one spot appears to be the refugee resettlement account. It's no surprise, again, that the Trump administration wants to cut down on the number of refugees who are allowed into the United States. But this confirms that already agencies are budgeting to have fewer refugees come in and less money going to those refugees who are resettled here.
So the Office of Refugee Resettlement, when it comes into custody of an unaccompanied minor, including children who've been made unaccompanied through their forcible separation from their parents at the border, the majority of them get placed in shelters which are run not by the government but by nonprofits or for-profits with contracts with the government. Do we know who the Office of Refugee Resettlement might be paying for this surge? Who would they be expanding contracts with?
Yes. Yeah, so a lot of these federally funded shelters are religious organizations or affiliated with religious groups. And some of them are perfectly wonderful religious nonprofits who are taking care of these children as best they can. But some of them do have an expressly evangelical mission and even a kind of proselytizing mission. And so you may recall in 2017, there was a case of an unaccompanied need immigrant minor who was in ORR's care, who was pregnant and wanted to have an abortion. She was denied that abortion, not just by the Trump administration, but by the shelter in which she was living, because this shelter had religious ties. It was run by religious individuals, and they felt that they would be, quote, complicit in her abortion if they simply stood aside and allowed her to terminate her pregnancy. There's a lot of concern here that we're seeing a kind of erosion of the wall between church and state when you have ORR contracting heavily with these religious groups. The director of ORR, Scott Lloyd, came to this position because of his anti-abortion advocacy. He has been known to personally counsel individuals about evangelism and about the evils of abortion. He has forced other pregnant undocumented minors to go to crisis pregnancy centers to be talked out of accessing the full range of reproductive health care. So this is not necessarily an encouraging thing that some of these minors will be moved out of ORR custody and into these shelters, because some of the shelters very much have their own agenda.
Mark Joseph Stern, thank you for joining us 2 days in a row and putting up with us through our technical glitches. Thank you for your reporting.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for being with us, Mark.